Mr. Henderson, reel 13. You come through the waters. I say you're below the waterline anyway, and you've got your skirts up, so you can't see a great deal.
Can't see anything.
The moment that you touched the beach, and some sides did come into view for you, what was happening? What was going on?
We dropped the skirts. Then the beach was there. There was no one on the beach. It was completely empty.
So you were
first. Except for our tanks.
You were first.
We were the first people on the beach. In fact, on one of the stamps, the 50th anniversary stamps that were published for the 50th anniversary, you'll see our tanks on the beach and the 4th Commandos coming in, which was true. The 4th Commandos under Lord Lovett followed us within minutes. The Lord Lovett came ashore with his piper, and we sort of took them off the beach. We had to dodge. There was obstacles like an iron triangles on the beach sticking up. If you'd gone on one of those, you might have got bellied. So if one went between the tracks and lifted your track off, you couldn't have moved. You'd been helpless. So we had to dodge those. Barbed wire, of course, didn't hold any fear for us at all. Mines. Some of the tanks, we could see some of the tanks had been knocked out, and we could see our crews had bailed out and were running and getting down into among the sand. The mines were a fear, because two of our boys lost their legs on the beach but mines did take two of our boys' legs off, both of them. Mines could put a tank out by blowing the tracks off. If one track went, of course, your tank was helpless.
Are you aware that although you're moving, you could be moving over something?
We knew about the mines. We'd been warned about these mines and prepared for mines. And a mine could do a lot of damage. It could kill a driver because you were sitting pretty well down, depending where you hit it, you know. But we lost quite a few tanks by mines on the beach that were later recovered. We couldn't stop and put new tracks on under fire like that, but they were recovered and went back into action with us. But some were also hit direct with artillery and blown up and were on fire. We could see burning tanks, and smoke from those tanks was covering the beach. I don't remember us putting smoke down, because if we had, I think it would have covered up the obstacles, which we had to avoid. And we tried to get round the obstacles, and the infantry were, the 4th Commandos were coming in, sheltering behind our tanks, and I think they would have been very pleased that we were there. And we had our machine guns to keep the infantry, the German infantry, keep their heads down. So I think they were... I think they were. They followed our tracks, which means they couldn't stand on any mines.
The coming out of that water must have been a very slow job. I mean, obviously, you would be getting a whole lot of orders from
yes.
your commander, left, right, wherever you are, to miss the obstacles. But that would be at a very, very slow speed, no doubt.
Yes, yes, very, very.
Do you recall when your guns were firing at any particular objective?
Oh, I could hear the gun going. Just firing any flash that was, any flashes that were up there, or the gun was firing all the time.
You mentioned the fact that you were being fired upon.
Yes.
Did the German defences come alive when you hit the beach rather than when you were coming in?
As far as I remember, I don't know what was happening as coming in, but when the skirts that we were being fired on, And the noise was dreadful. I think the gun was slew before we hardly got the skirts down and went fired straight away. We were told to get off the beach before we'd ever got anywhere, you know, in training, to get on and off the beach as quickly as possible, because it was a dangerous place to be. It was open. It was very open. That beach is a long, beautiful beach. And even though the tide was almost right in, but it was still a pretty big open beach. and we headed into the village of the small town of Hermanville, which was where we went in. Hermanville and Oostrom.
The view that you would be getting, what you could see, would be this stretch of beach. And then
the little sand dunes at the far end of it.
How deep would the beach be, you estimated, from, you know, the water's edge where you were, say, to the first buildings or road or what have you?
I would think it would be about 200 yards.
And you had to move across there.
It's a long time ago, mind.
You moved across there. So, initially, did you come on a road or houses or what?
We came up straight onto the houses. The houses of Hermanville are right on the edge of the beach. Like a small seaside town, which is Hermanville is.
And this would have been prepared for defence. There wouldn't be civilians in the places, would they?
We never. Yeah. I did. I saw one civilian, old lady, with a black dress on, carrying a basket or something. That was the only lady, the only civilian that I saw. I don't know when I saw the next civilian. That was one. As we came off the beach into the town, there was an old lady, and I don't know what. And she just ignored us completely. So I don't know.
Were you being hit with anything? I mean, obviously you weren't hit to be stopped, but machine gun fire, rifle fire.
Would be hit by rifle fire. We had to be. But
does that have any effect inside the
town? No, we trained for that. We trained. We'd had the Norfolk shooting at us in England. It was just, you might as well have been riding through rain. But it didn't worry us at all. We knew that we were safe in there from rifle fire.
Have you any memories of that first few minutes, hours of action?
I don't know. I think my heart must have been pumping like mad, and I heard some shouting going on at the back. I was just sort of sitting there and trying to get round these obstacles. It may be in a way the opposite. I was glad that they were there because it kept my mind occupied. And then I'm told to get off the beach as quick as I could, and that's what we did. And we stopped when we come off the beach. I think it was to sort of give the infantry some support. And then we moved into Hermanville itself.
Is there much shouting within the crew of the tank when there's things are going on?
There was then. There was quite a bit of shouting, because I think Mr. McMichael was as excited as everybody else. And because, I mean, we're all young soldiers together. He was only our age. He was only an early 20, you know, a very, very young lieutenant. Very tall chap. College chap, college type, you know. But no panic. There was no panic. I never heard of any stories or anyone say that so and so was had let the regiment down by running or anything. I never heard anybody being so frightened that they couldn't do the job, which was a good thing.
You mentioned the fact that you saw some tanks burning that were,
yes,
hit.
Yes.
Did that register with you, what had happened to them?
Well, I wondered if anyone had been killed, you know. One of my friends, Tommy Buck, was a sergeant in B Squadron, and he was telling me that he'd lost three tanks. He lost one on D-Day, and he lost another one on D-7, another one on D-8. And when the crews got out, they had to get a head back for a regimental headquarters, where they were waited there until they got another tank. And Major Cody Simpson, who was in charge of this fitting new tanks, he said to Tommy, "What again?" After losing his third tank, he went back for another one. And Major Cody Simpson, dead now, he said, "What again?" He said, "Yes," as if it was Tommy's fault that or he'd lost his tank, as if someone had, if he'd mislaid it. And it was quite laughable. Tommy said, "Well, what? How the hell? I can't help it, you know." Well, he lost three in about in 8 days, I think. He was one of those that got the military medal. His driver was killed on the beach, His driver was a very, very good footballer. And I can't think of his name, but he was killed, one of those that was killed on the beach.
The wireless operator would be quite busy, was he not?
Very busy. He'd be very busy. And you wouldn't be able to... He was busy telling us what... the crew commander could talk to us, and we had a... We didn't have a microphone. I mean, you couldn't hold a microphone and grab your tongue at the same time. So we had a little voice throat mic, and the vibrations from your throat turned into speech as it went in. Have you seen these microphones? And they were all right, and he would give you the information. You didn't have much talking to do anyway. He told you what to do, and you did it.
You got off the beach, and you were saying you drove into Hermanville. What was the scene there? What was going on there?
It was very, very quiet. There was German infantry round about the houses, which you were having to, unfortunately, shoot, knock some of the houses down. There was a lot of this. We were held up a lot by this type of thing. There was major guns that needed knocking out. We hadn't many tanks left. We were very, very low on tanks. C Squadron fared pretty well. I forget how many tanks they had. I think they had 10 left out of the 20, which wasn't so bad. And they were coming in at Hermanville as well. But as far as A Squadron, which was on our right, on our left, and C Squadron on our right, and we were more or less with B Squadron, we didn't have a lot of... If there'd been a lot of tanks there, I think we would have had a bit of a pasting, if there'd been tanks waiting for us. But we were lucky in that respect, that it was mostly infantry and some light artillery that our tanks took out.
Was it easy going, manoeuvring through the streets, the roads?
Oh, yes.
Were they narrow or wide?
No, not really. I remember that there was I heard someone on about some snipers in the church at Hermanville. Have you seen Hermanville Cemetery? Well, as you go up into the cemetery, the church is on you, up the lane to the cemetery. There's a church there with a flat. Where the steeple had been, well, one of our tanks took that steeple off, because there was a couple of snipers up in that steeple, and they'd knocked the steeple off the Hermanville church, and it never got rebuilt. It's still flat now today. I can't really remember how long we were in Hermanville, but it didn't seem very long.
Were you called upon to plough through a house with the tank?
No. No, we didn't, no. Walls, garden walls and things like that, and outhouses we've gone through. One of the nasty things was, later on, not so much here, but later on, where you had to run over bodies on the road, and horses, dead horses and dead Germans on the roads. You couldn't avoid, especially if you had ploughed land on either side, you couldn't go off the road to avoid a body, and you couldn't get out and shift it. So you had no option but to go over it. And the tracks of the tanks used to smell, especially in late summer. This come later on, where the roads were blocked at the other side of Caen, when the Falaise Gap. And we shelled the Falaise Gap for a week, and then we moved in. And we had to go through the Falaise Gap, where we'd been shelling, to get into the village of Falaise, and the roads and everything were just ruined by dead horses, because they had a lot of horse transport, and there was bodies lying everywhere.
We'll come to that, of course, as part of the story.
Yes.
Any more memories of Hermanville itself and that initial period?
It didn't seem to we didn't seem to be there very long.
What happened to you then?
We were in the all that afternoon. We were weeding out artillery guns and running about that area, and we were still in Hermanville, on the outskirts of Hermanville that night, when we we were lagered up that night on a long slope, and that was the first night in France, and I was on sentry, and what had happened that day had gone through my mind, you know. I'd seen one of my friend's tank hit, and I didn't know, but he was killed in it. Topper Brown, the wireless operator. And his crew commander, Lieutenant Hunter, I saw them killed.
Was this on the beach? Where they were
just off the beach, yes. It wasn't until a couple of days later, when you get casualty lists, you want to know who's been killed, of course, naturally. And it's quite a shock when the first casualty list came, and you just couldn't believe that lads you'd been with last on Sunday, that this was maybe Wednesday, that were dead. It was a hell of a shock, the first casualty list. You never got really hardened to this casualty list, but the first one was a terrible shock.
The end of a first day of great activity and great danger, and you say you're lagered. Is that a moment for exciting tales, or
no,
exhaustion, or what?
There was only me and another chap, and I was a bit upset. And the lad that I was with on guard, I said, I feel a bit. He said, go and see Sergeant Carr, who dug in near where we were, and ask him if he has anything to drink. So I said, have you got anything to drink, Sergeant Carr? In my water bottle, he said. And he had some Calvados in his water bottle. So I picked his water bottle up and had a long, long drink. And it was nearly 100% proof. And it just about burned my throat out. Well, I did my 2-hour stint, and then when it came to go to bed, I got in my slit trench, which we all slept in, and they had a job to wake me up for my second stint. I was drunk. I was not drunk, but I was in very heavy sleep, and it wouldn't only be the Calvados. We'd had very little sleep on the boat coming over, and then we'd been up early that morning. In action right since about 5:30 when we left the landing craft, and that would be catching up on me as well. Well, I woke up and did my second stint, and then we went back into action that day, heading up over the Orne bridges.
Can we just talk briefly about lagering? You come to the end of your day's work. What's the process? What situation do you know? What layout do you have in a lager situation?
You just form your tanks into a sort of a sheltered position, and park up. Dig slit trenches, dig a latrine, very, very essential latrine. It's the first thing you have to do. My regiment was very, very strict on any latrines. And then you got down to cooking your meal. Now, I don't know whether we did any cooking that first night or not, or whether we had a dry ration because of the fires and things. It runs in my mind that we just had a cold meal that night. And then there's the sentries to be put out.
Do you dig by a personal tank, or is it a situation clear of the tanks where you're digging in, as you say?
It's not too far away. Just somewhere near your tank.
But it in itself is part of this defensive
line. Yes, yes. Depends where you are. Sometimes you might be. What we tried to do would be getting to. Have you seen the sunken roads in France? If you can get into a sunken road with your tanks, then you could sleep under your tank because the road was hard, and your tank was out of ideal position, ideal situation.
And you say you did the guard duties.
Oh, yes.
You know, fighting all day must have been an extremely tiring job.
Very, very
exhausting.
Tiring.
And then to find
exhausting.
You've got to do a 2-hour stint with guard duties.
Fortunately, in those days, 20-year-old, you could sleep anywhere. You could fall asleep with a minute. Nowadays, I would have found it very difficult, but young people with easy consciences can sleep. But it was still very tiring, because you never got enough sleep. And young boys need a lot of sleep.
Well, what about maintaining the tanks after a day's hard
work?
No,
always had to be greased every day.
So that night, that first night, you'd have that to go through?
Oh, yes. They'd never done so much work without a grease. You know, it was... greasing was something that had to be done. It didn't take very long. There was two of you.
So the order of precedence is that you draw your tank into the lager...
And fueled up.
Do you dig your slip trench for safety before you start these processes of digging the sort of fueling and so forth? And then the
well, you fueled up when you got when the fuel vehicles come up with the jerry cans.
And that's got to be done plus the greasing.
Fueled up and ammoed up, whatever ammo you'd used. You asked the other day if anyone ever ran out of ammunition and petrol. I've asked a lot of, well, several drivers. Did you ever? And it was just laughable. Well, of course not. You know, you wouldn't think of running out of fuel. You were surprised that no one ever ran out of ammunition. We never did. Oh, fuel. Of course, we carried spare fuel on the tanks, you know. If ever one, we carried spare jerry cans.
Presumably, therefore, at some point there would be orders issued for your next day.
Yes. What used to happen would be that the squadron leader would go to the colonel. The colonel would probably have to go to see the brigadier, and he would get his information from the brigadier, and then the brigadier would give instructions to this, that, and the other, and then it would be passed down the line, and then the squadron leader would get it, and then he would come into where we were all lagered and shout for crew commanders, and all the crew commanders would gather round the squadron leader, and he would blow his whistle. And they would all the crew commanders would gather round the squadron leader get the gen on tomorrow, what was happening tomorrow. And this was every night. I remember one particular time when Major Wormalder was a marvellous, terrific chap. In fact, the last word we had from Major Wormalder, I think it was last a couple of years ago, when he sent a Christmas card to the Regimental Association to say, "I'm sorry I won't be with you, but I'm dying of cancer and I won't be alive then." It was just a matter of saying, "Well, I'm sorry, but I've already made other arrangements," which he had. He'd arranged to die. So he died of cancer a couple of years back. But I remember him standing there, giving his instructions, which we could see, and the others were all crouched down in little hidey positions, and the shells were flying all over the place, and he was there giving his... he had no fear whatever. It was Derek Wormald that got... I think I'm right in saying that it was him that got the DSO for the marvellous work that he did. Wonderful chap.
Did you get the opportunity at this stage, or when things slackened off, to look back at the scene on the beaches and on the sea? What scene was there?
What?
In looking back at what was happening behind you, in effect.
We're still within sight of Hermanville a month after. We hadn't got far in a month after. We were really supposed to take Cairn, which was maybe 6 miles in from the beach that first day. The Americans expected us to take Cairn, to take that 50 Dib would take the other big place.
Bayeux.
I think they did get it the first day.
The second day.
Or second day. But we had no chance. We met too much opposition. We met the 21st SS Panzers, and the 9th and 10th and the 11th SS Panzers, they just held us up. We just couldn't take it. And then eventually they bombed it. They came with a 1,000 bomber raid and just almost obliterated it.
So during this first night there would still be a tremendous amount of shellfire in both directions.
Yes, I remember thinking we could hear these big shells, these big 15 or 16 inch shells going over from Rodney or Black Prince or whatever it was, or the Worst Bite, and they sounded like steam rollers going over. That was the sort of sound they made, and they were firing back over to the warships. I thought, well, if ever those two shells meet up there, they're going to come down on our head. But that was something else we had to learn when we got to Normandy, especially on a night like that on Sentry, when there was shelling going on, which it never stopped, shelling all night and all day. Nights were never quiet, and you used to think a shell would go off, there's somebody else probably being killed. You know, this was how thoughts used to go around. But you had to tell the difference between a shell going and a shell coming. And I couldn't get it at first, and it was that's one of ours. And it was a crack of a shell, but the other one was a plop. It was a sudden. And there was a big difference. When you got to know the difference, you could tell a one that was coming and what was going for the two noises.
Is it true that you couldn't hear the shell that hit you?
So they say. But we would wake up in the morning and we'd find shrapnel all over the place. But they used to say, well, if you hang a blanket round you, shrapnel won't go through the blanket because there's too much give in it. It's not taunt enough to go through.
You never experimented with it.
Yes, we did. We used to have blankets hang blankets and things on hedges beside us. And I think it did. They said it would stop a bullet.
What was the weather like this first day?
Terrible. The weather was wet and dull, and windy. With the brief periods of a fine day and then thunderstorm, and the fields were bogged with the terrible thunderstorm. I don't know how long this was after D-Day. It would probably be a bit after, but even all the slit trenches filled up with water. Terrible few days of incessant rain came. This was probably about the time when the harbour was gales. I never saw the because that was at the other end. I never saw the Mulberry Harbour, but it was almost wrecked by the gales.
What was your task then the following morning? As I say, your orders obviously being given. What happened to you then?
What we were doing mostly was holding the. We were frightened of being chased off the beach. And there was a lot of stuff coming in, and stuff was piling up. We had to break out. We couldn't break out. So what we were doing, there was a pocket, there was a gap, which I didn't know all this at the time. I'm only going what they say. Between us and Juno Beach was a gap, and we were holding that position there in case to put a wedge between Sword Beach and Juno Beach, which they didn't. But if they had done, it would have been. If the tanks had got between us, they could have caused an awful lot of damage. So we were stopping the 21st. I'm sure it was the 21st Panzer Grenadier or the Panzer SS Panzers that were against us at that particular time. At the other side of Caen, we came up against the 10th Panzers and the Hitler Youth. They were very much in the forefront there, the Hitler Youth.